Okay, thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. So I'm going to tell you about some work I did with David Simmons Duffin, who is a graduate student at Harvard. And the title of my talk is Superconformal Flavor Simplified. So here, superconformal flavor refers to the idea that the flavor physics hierarchies, for example, the question of why is the electron much, much lighter than the top quark, can be explained via conformal dynamics. And the rough idea is that you give different generations different anomalous dimensions under some CFT, and these anomalous dimensions control the rate at which the Yukawa couplings flow to zero as you go into the IR, and this can give you a hierarchical structure. Hopefully the meaning of the word simplified will become clear as I go through the talk. And so here I'm going to be focusing on supersymmetric theories. And typically what people do in supersymmetric extensions of the standard model is introduce superfields for each of the matter fields. So we have QUDLE coming in three generations. We have Higgs up and Higgs down, and then we write down Yukawa couplings and the superpotential, and each of these couplings is really a 3x3 matrix in flavor space, and then the assumption is that these 3x3 matrices have a hierarchical structure to their eigenvalues. So then the question is, what sort of model might generate this hierarchical structure? Well, people have come up with a number of ideas. One possibility is that there's some sort of horizontal symmetry which acts differently on the different generations, and so couplings involving the lighter generations might require more insertions of a spurion VEV. Another nice idea is that the matter fields are actually composite operators, and the different generations have different UV dimension. So that can also give you a hierarchical structure. And the idea that I want to focus on is the idea that the hierarchies can be generated dynamically, or in other words, through renormalization group running. Now, at first sight, this might be a little bit confusing, because you might say, wait a minute, supersymmetric non-renormalization theorems tell you that the superpotential will not get corrected, at least in perturbation theory. But the way around this is to note that the flavor hierarchies can also show up in the Kähler potential. So in particular, the coefficients of the kinetic terms, or the wave function renormalization factors, can also contain a hierarchical structure. And so if the first generation comes with a huge number in front of its kinetic term, and the second generation comes with a medium-sized number in front of its kinetic term, the third generation comes with an order one number, then when you canonically normalize the fields, the physical Yukawa couplings will inherit a hierarchical structure. So if my underlying flavor model generates a hierarchy in the Kähler potential, then, for example, I can have a completely anarchical superpotential. I can just have random order one couplings. And because non-renormalization theorems don't protect the Kähler potential, the flavor hierarchies can have a dynamical origin. Well, before I talk about what kind of underlying flavor model could generate this, let me first tell you what our goal is. So let's say I have a flavor model which generates this structure. Then when I canonically normalize the fields, every matter field comes with a small number, epsilon, which is 1 over the square root of the wave function factor. And then parametrically, I can write down all of the masses and mixing angles in terms of these epsilons. And if each matter field comes with an epsilon factor, there are more than enough parameters to easily fit all the masses. And the CKM mixing angles are predicted to have a symmetric structure, which turns out to fit the experimentally observed values pretty well. So that all seems to work. We can try to go one step further. and see what happens if we impose SU5 gut relations on these suppression factors. For example, if I group QU and E into a 10 of SU5, D and L into a 5 bar of SU5, now I have 3 epsilon 10s and 3 epsilon 5 bars. Then what you can do is try to run the low energy Yukawa couplings up to the gut scale. Then try to determine what the epsilon 10s and the epsilon 5 bars need to be. Now, there's some subtlety here uncertainty, because when you try to extrapolate the Yukawa couplings up to the gut scale, you run into unknown Suzy threshold corrections, which depend on the unknown spectrum of superpartner masses. But you can try to estimate the size of these. And this is roughly what you get. So by looking at the gut scale values of the up-type quark Yukawa couplings, you can determine the epsilon 10s, which roughly fall into these ranges. By looking at either the down-type quark Yukawas or the lepton Yukawas, you can extract the epsilon 5 bars. And typically, you don't quite get the same numbers here as you would in a theory which had a perfect SU5 symmetry, but they're pretty close. And they're at least not hierarchically different from each other. So you might say that it looks like there's an underlying SU5 gut structure up to order one effects.
What's the overall normalization of epsilon?
This is just the 1 over the square root of the wave function factor.
They can all be scaled together or not.
They could all be scaled together. Here they're just free parameters. They're just free parameters. And really the assumption we're making is that in the basis where the Kähler potential is diagonal and has a hierarchical structure, the superpotential has random order one numbers. We're later going to explain where this comes from. But first, I'm trying to give you an idea of what kind of numbers we're shooting for. Okay. The bare minimum thing we might want to do with a flavor model is generate suppression factors in 2 generations of tens. Okay. So these are what are called ten-centered models. And for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to call a 10-centered model successful if it predicts something within a factor of 3 of these 2 values for epsilon T1 and epsilon T2. On the other hand, if I go back to this slide, if I look at the down type quarks and the leptons, if tan beta is small, then I'm going to have no explanation for why they are somewhat light. So 10-centered models are going to require going to fairly large values of tan beta in order to cancel out these small numbers. Okay. And of course, we want to go. If we want to talk about a slightly more complicated model, we can think about models that also generate suppressions in the 5 bars, in which case you could go to smaller values of tan beta. Okay, but the 10-centered models here are going to be the starting point. So now the question is, what kind of model will do this? And back in 2000, Nelson and Strassler wrote a nice paper which proposed that this could happen due to superconformal dynamics. And the idea is that you want to give T1 and T2 large anomalous dimensions in some super conformal theory. And to do this, you introduce super potential interactions. You start with a CFT. Now I can deform the CFT by coupling T1 to some CFT operator, coupling T2 to some different CFT operator. And if these are relevant deformations, then you might be able to argue that the CFT flows to a new fixed point in which these interactions are marginal. And if these interactions are marginal, then T1 and T2 can acquire large anomalous dimensions. So the anomalous dimensions then control the rate at which irrelevant operators flow to zero as I go into the IR. So this translates into the epsilon parameters, which depend on the renormalization scale mu, and they scale like mu over some UV scale lambda with a theory became strongly coupled to the power of the dimension of the field minus one. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Is SU5 supposed to become strongly coupled?
Or? The SU5 is not strongly coupled.
So does the SU5 operator get a large anomalous dimension? Because T1, I think, is in SU5, right?
Correct. So we're going to require that. So we're imagining that there's some strongly coupled gauge group, which is in some CFT regime, and the matter fields charged out of that gauge group are also charged under SU5. So you can have composite CFT operators, which are singlets under the strongly coupled gauge group, but also charged under SU5.
So I understand how 1 and 02 can get large anomalous dimensions, but not T1 and T2.
So T1 and T2 are getting large anomalous dimensions because of these interactions. So the assumption here is that these interactions are marginal in the CFT.
But T1 and T2 are not really part of the CFT, right?
Well, now they are.
So the SU5 is also conformal?
No. So here you can imagine the limit in which SU5 is just a global symmetry. I mean, it's really a gauge symmetry, but we're taking the approximation that we can ignore the fact that it's gauged. Is that clear?
Well, no, I'm confused because the standard normal matter is not really charged under the CFT whatever strong.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So it's kind of like a free field theory tied onto it. So I'm having trouble imagining that T1 itself gets a large anomalous dimension. I understand the one getting some random dimension and then dimension. It will be a relevant deformation, but so long as T1 is in some sense not how do you put it. Since T1 is free, the effective coupling might be small for it, and you can still use the conformal intuition for a while, but I'm having a hard time imagining that T1 itself gets a large anomalous dimension. Does that make sense?
That's precisely the point of these interactions.
Yeah. So
we're assuming we're starting with something like SUSY QCD in the conformal window, okay, and also charge the quarks under SU5. Okay, so now I can come up with composite Meson operators, which are in the 10-bar representation of SU5.
Sure.
Okay, and now I deform the theory by adding these couplings, where O are the Mesons. Mm-hmm. Okay, and if these are relevant deformations, then as I go into the IR, the assumption is that my theory approaches a new conformal fixed point, in which these interactions are marginal and strongly interacting.
I'll ask later.
Okay, maybe it'll become more clear when I write down specific models. Maybe that'll help. Okay, so in any case, the picture here is that there's some scale at which I enter an approximately conformal regime, calling that lambda. There's some conformal window down to a scale lambda c, which generates the hierarchies. At the scale lambda c, we're imagining that there are relevant deformations around, which lead to exit from the conformal regime. And furthermore, we want all exotic states that are not part of the MSSM to decouple at this scale. Okay, so below the scale, we recover the MSSM. Well, one question you could ask is, well, at what scale should this happen? And there are a couple considerations that suggest that maybe this should all happen at a fairly high scale. One consideration is that when we write down these interactions, fairly often, it doesn't have to happen, but fairly often, these interactions will violate baryon and lepton number. In which case, when you integrate out all of the exotic CFT matter at the scale lambda c, you can generate dangerous proton decay operators in the Kähler potential. And requiring that the proton doesn't decay tells you that this scale really shouldn't be too far from the gut scale. Okay, so that's one consideration. Another consideration that suggests that maybe this should happen at a high scale is that typically you're introducing lots of new fields which are charged under the standard model gauge group, which means that the standard model gauge couplings can blow up and hit a lambda pole at some intermediate scale. So if we want our theory to make sense up to high energies, maybe we want this all these new states to come in at high energies as well. Well, in order to actually evaluate a model, what you'd like to do is write down some theory and then calculate the anomalous dimensions. Well, in a superconformal theory, this is equivalent to determining the correct U and R symmetry in the superconformal algebra. And the reason is that for chiral operators, their dimension is related to their U and R charge in a very simple way. Well, back in 2000, when Nelson and Strassler wrote their paper, this was, in general, a very hard problem. And you had to work pretty hard in order to find theories where the U and R symmetry could be uniquely determined. Okay, and in order for it to be uniquely determined, what they needed to do is introduce lots of superpotential interactions, because each superpotential interaction gives you one constraint on the U and R charges of your theory. So if you have enough of them, then you have enough constraints to uniquely determine the R charge and the anomalous dimensions. One other thing is that all of the models that were originally written down had chiral matter content, which meant that they needed to work pretty hard in order to make sure that all exotic states decoupled from the low energy theory. And in practice, this meant they had to introduce even more interactions to make sure everything got a mass. So just to give you an idea of what had come before, let me show you a couple of their models. And this is also in part to motivate the word simplified in the title of my talk. Okay, so here's one of the models that Nelson and Strassler wrote down. It's based on a strongly coupled SP12 gauge group. I have the standard model tens and five bars and Higgs's. And then a bunch of stuff which is charged under SP12 as well as SU5 gut. And then the superpotential of my theory involves a coupling of T1 to some operator, T2 to some other operator. This one also couples one of the five bars to some operator. And then there are a bunch of interactions designed to make the UNR symmetry uniquely determined, as well as to make sure that all of the exotic states decouple. Okay. Another theory they wrote down was based on a strongly interacting SP8 gauge group. And so this table came directly out of their paper. You can see there are lots of question marks here because they couldn't uniquely determine the dimensions. This is all kind of the motivation behind our work. And what we pointed out is that this general problem of determining the UNR symmetry of a superconformal theory when there aren't a lot of superpotential interactions was solved by Introligator and Wecht in 2003 and goes by the name of A maximization. And the statement of A maximization is that the correct UNR symmetry, namely the one which is in the same multiple as the stress tensor, is the one which maximizes this function A, 3 trace R cubed minus trace R, over the space of all possible UNR symmetries. Okay? And the space of possible UNR symmetries is obtained by taking any initial UNR symmetry and writing an arbitrary linear combination of it with all of the IR flavor symmetries, UN flavor symmetries of your theory that it can mix with. Okay? So when I say, so this function should really be viewed as a function of the coefficients appearing in this linear combination. And then the correct linear combination is the one which locally maximizes this function. Okay, so that may sound a little bit strange, so let me say a few words about why it is true.
What
does the
sub t mean?
Sub t means R trial. So this is the trial R symmetry. So why is this statement true? Well, maximizing A is equivalent to saying that all the first derivatives vanish and the second derivatives form a negative definite matrix. The statement that the first derivatives vanish is equivalent to saying that the trace RR flavor anomaly is proportional to the gravity-gravity flavor anomaly. Okay, and this is true because the R current is in the same multiple as the stress tensor. So you can show that that is true. The statement that the second matrix of second derivatives is negative definite is a statement about the positivity properties of the R flavor anomaly. And so the three-point function of the R current and two flavor currents is related to the three-point function of the stress tensor and two flavor currents, which is in turn proportional to the two-point function of flavor currents, for example, by taking the OPE of the stress tensor with the flavor current. And two-point function of flavor currents have a definite sign due to unitarity. So that's roughly how the argument goes. But proof aside, the interesting point is that this is actually very easy to implement when doing model building, because all you have to do is write down some polynomial function and maximize it. I should say one caveat to keep in mind is that knowing the space of trial R charges means knowing all of the IR flavor symmetries of your theory, and sometimes this can be hard to determine, in particular because accidental symmetries can arise which are not obvious from the UV description of the theory. So that's something you need to worry a little bit about. One way to gain evidence for accidental symmetries arising is, for example, if you naively perform A maximization, you get some R charges, and then you find that some gauge invariant chiral operator has an R charge which violates the unitarity bound given by R greater than or equal to 2/3. If this is true, then you know you did something wrong. And one of the things that you may have done wrong is not included the full set of IR flavor symmetries. um, Okay, so that's something to keep in the back of your head. But caveats aside, the point is that A maximization makes nearly all supercanonical Flamberg models calculable, in the sense that you can fill in all the question marks. And so, for example, you can take this old Nelson-Strassler model, fill in all the question marks. It turns out that the one I showed you a few slides ago doesn't work because the dimensions of T1 and T2 are too close to each other to successfully generate a hierarchy. But maybe more interestingly, you can take a fresh look at this class of models and try to figure out, well, what is the simplest model that works? Well, in searching for a simple model, we need to impose some constraints on ourselves. So we decided to focus on 10-centric SU5 models. We decided to focus on vector-like models, because this greatly simplifies the process of CFT exit. All you have to do is introduce mass terms for all of the CFT matter fields, and everything decouples. And the main constraints we have in the back of our head are this problem of proton decay. If the interactions you write down violate baryon and lepton number, this dynamics better happen close to the gut scale. And even if everything is happening above the gut scale, you still might worry that you're introducing lots of matter charged under SU5. And it could happen that the SU5 gauge coupling starts becoming strongly coupled and blows up in the middle of the conformal window that you need in order to generate the hierarchies. Okay, so this indicates that your calculable framework is breaking down. Let me say a few more words about this latter constraint. Well, once we know the correct UNR symmetry of our theory, then we can integrate the SU5 beta function. Okay, and because things have large anomalous dimensions, we'd better use the exact NSVZ beta function, which can be written in this way, which makes it clear that you need to know the UNR symmetry of your theory. Well, in addition to needing to know all the dimensions, you also need to know what your matter content is above the gut scale, and this is obviously something we don't know. But for the purposes of this talk, we're just going to conservatively assume that there is an addition to the CFT sector and the MSSM fields, you have the matter content of a minimal SU5 gut, namely an extra adjoint field, whose purpose is to break the gut group. Okay, so this is kind of just a minimal assumption that you can make. It'll turn out that requiring that there isn't a lambda pole in the middle of the conformal window that you need to generate the hierarchies is a fairly strong constraint on the models that we consider.
You need a lot of these fields to generate a large Z factor, and that also generates
Exactly. So there's some tension there.
Would you need at least 2-10 plus 10 bar pairs or something like that? 2-10 plus 10 bar?
2-10. Well, I'll show you the models in a second. So for example, here, let me start with a simple toy model. So the simple toy model is a toy model because it's only generating a suppression factor for one generation. And it's based on a strongly coupled SUN gauge group with fundamentals in the 10 plus 1 representation of SU5, anti-fundamentals in the 10 bar plus 1 representation of SU5. So from the viewpoint of SUN, this is SUSY QCD with 11 flavors. Okay, so in the absence of any additional interactions, we know that this flows to a conformal fixed point for n between 4 and 7. Okay, so now we deform our standard SUSY QCD theory by this interaction. And you can check that in the theory without this interaction, this is a relevant deformation. So you expect that this will eventually cause the theory to flow to a new fixed point in which this interaction is marginal. And then the question is, what is the U1R symmetry of this new theory? So what do we know? Well, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 unknown R charges. And the superpotential gives you one constraint. And requiring anomaly cancellation of U1R with SUN squared gives you another constraint. So you have 2 constraints on 5 unknowns. And then all you have to do is maximize A subject to these 2 constraints. Okay. Well, this is something which is maybe hard to do on paper, but trivial to do with Mathematica. And here is the result. So for each value of n in the conformal window, you can determine the U1R symmetry. You can see that for smaller values of n, the R charge of T1 is close to 2/3, which means the theory is fairly weakly coupled. And as n gets larger and larger, the R charge increases, and the anomalous dimensions get larger and larger. Okay. So in particular, you can convert this into a suppression factor, or the wave function renormalization factor. And as the R charges get larger and larger, you need a smaller running distance in order to get the same suppression. Any questions at this point?
What is your reason you want that option?
This was just a toy model. So on the next I'm going to write down theories that have generate suppressions in 2 generations. Is that your question?
Yes. So if you introduce 3 reduction, you cannot generate a hierarchy, right? T1, T2, because both of them get larger anomalous dimension, right?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
You introduce only interaction with T1.
Yes.
So if you introduce T1 and T2 in interaction, we will not get a hierarchy.
You will get a hierarchy. Sorry. Right. So it's important that T1 and T2 have different anomalous dimensions. Okay. So they end up with suppression factors that are different because they have power law running with different powers. Okay, so that's a crucial, something crucial that you need in order to generate a hierarchical structure. Okay, so let me show you kind of a simple extension to include a second generation. Now I have a strongly coupled SUN gauge group with fundamentals in the 10 plus 5 bar plus 1. Here I'm calling them x plus q bar plus s, and anti-fundamentals in the 10 bar plus 5 plus 1, x bar plus q plus s bar. And from the viewpoint of SUN, this is Suzy QCD with 16 flavors. So again, thanks to Seiberg, we know that this will flow to a conformal fixed point for n between 6 and 10. Okay, so now we can take this CFT, add these interaction terms. The nice thing about this choice of matter content is that it contains exactly 2 gauge invariant low dimension operators in the 10 bar representation of SU5, which means I can write down a coupling of T1 to some operator, a coupling of T2 to some different operator, but there isn't a third operator around that I can couple T3 to. Okay. And maybe I should stress that we're being completely general here. Namely, you might expect that some linear combination of the T's appears in front of this operator, some linear combination appears in front of this operator. But you can simply define those linear combinations to be T1 and T2 without any loss of generality.
have aggregation variant interactions that you can write down there.
I'm sorry?
Then you have aggregation variant interactions that you can write down there. Replacing Q by H or something like that.
Sorry, replacing. So, so I could, in this theory, I can come up with other interactions I could write down involving, for example, the five bars. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm assuming that those are not present. You can come up with some symmetry reason to enforce that, but right now that's just an assumption. You can also come up with, you know, operators involving more fields that you could write down. So, for example, I can certainly introduce something like xx bar squared into my theory. Most of the operators with a large number of fields you can show are irrelevant deformations in the CFT. So if you add them with a small coefficient, they'll flow back to zero. Okay, so that's a kind of analysis you can do. Let me also say that it's straightforward to show that these interactions necessarily violate baryon and lepton number, and will in fact induce dimension 6 proton decay operators in the Kähler potential. That can be dangerous unless this all happens at a high scale. Well, okay, so now all we need to do is maximize A, subject to the constraint that this superpotential is marginal. Here's what you get for each value of N in the conformal window. As you can see, the theory starts out somewhat weakly coupled and becomes more and more strongly coupled. In the third column, I am indicating, let me say first that here I'm just assuming that the CFT exits at the gut scale, so I'm setting lambda c equal to the gut scale just to be able to calculate things. And under that assumption, this column gives you the location of the SU5 Landau pole relative to lambda c. The last column tells you the running distance you need in order to generate the hierarchies, namely get within a factor of 3 of epsilon t1 equals 0.003 and epsilon t2 equals 0.04, as I mentioned earlier. So that's what this range indicates, that factor of 3. And you can see that in all cases, the SU5 gauge coupling will hit a Landau pole before the top of the conformal window that you need. Okay. So this doesn't seem to work very well. Well, okay, so now you might naturally ask the question, are there any simple models that can avoid this Landau pole constraint? Well, it should be clear that you really need a sector which is as efficient as possible. Namely, you want to minimize the number of new SU5 representations that you introduce while keeping the theory as strongly coupled as you can. One of the things we did is kind of scanned over all of the simple models that we could come up with. Basically writing down all SU5 simple group models that have the right group theory structure to give suppressions to two generations of tens. And in doing this, we found a number of models that have the right group theory structure, but almost all of them fail due to this Landau pole constraint. And we ended up finding just one model that seems to avoid this bound, so I'm going to tell you what that is next. Any questions before I go on? Okay, so the one somewhat successful model is based on the strongly coupled SP2N gauge group with fundamentals in the 5 plus 5 bar, Q plus Q bar, and an anti-symmetric tensor. Okay, and you can argue that this theory, SPN with an anti-symmetric tensor and fundamentals, in this case, flows to a conformal fixed point for n greater than or equal to 4. Okay, well, one of the nice things about SPN gauge groups is that their contractions are anti-symmetric. And this means that I can write down a T1 Q-bar Q-bar, or T1 5-bar 5-bar coupling, and use the same field in both places, because both the SPN contraction and the SU5 contraction are anti-symmetric. So this coupling is allowed. So this is part of what makes this theory more efficient than some of the others we considered. The anti-symmetric tensor is around to let us write down a second coupling, T2 Q bar A Q bar, and it can be a homework assignment to check that this is allowed by the anti-symmetry contractions. Okay, this is what I just said. Again, you can check that these interactions necessarily violate baryon and lepton number. So this has to happen at a high scale. So what's the result of A maximization? Well, for...
So you introduced a Q and the Q isn't doing anything, so can I read that?
We're gonna give a mouse.
So I've introduced a Q and the Q isn't doing anything in these interactions. It is charged under the gauge group, so it is participating in the strong interactions. And the reason it's here is because we were writing down vector-like theories. And so this is going to make it very easy to decouple the CFT matter by writing them down a mass term QQ bar. Okay? Okay, so here are the R charges coming out of A maximization for each value of N. Again, we have the location of the SU5 Landau pole and the running distance you need to generate the hierarchies. There's still, you can see that there's still some tension here. SU5 is still becoming, you know, pretty strongly coupled towards the top of the conformal window. You know, this running distance is requiring something like 3 orders of magnitude, and you might worry that it's hard to fit that between the gut scale and the Planck scale. But at least the situation's a bit better. Fortunately, we can also think about other deformations to this theory. So for example, I can add trace A cubed as an interaction in my theory. And in this case, at least for N equals 5, you need 1.5 orders of magnitude of running, and the SU5 Landau pole is nowhere in sight. Okay? So this seems to work pretty well. I can also think about adding trace A to the fourth, and similar things work pretty similarly in this case. Any questions? Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, the thing is, adding this superpotential term forces the R charge of A to be two-thirds. Right, and I suppressed it here, but it was something much smaller than two-thirds in this case. So it does radically. Actually, we can just read it off as the difference between RT1 and RT2 because of the interactions. Because the interactions differ by a factor of RA. So it's something like 0.2, 0.3 in these cases. So it's a pretty radical change. So the summary here is that these models are pretty simple and seem to nicely fit between the gut scale and the Planck scale. As I said before, CFT exit will occur when you add mass terms to the theory and they become important. So I can write down QRQ mass terms and a trace A squared mass term. And those will control the scale at which the CFT exits. I should say it's also pretty straightforward in these models to introduce suppressions for the five bars if you want by adding extra standard model singlets that are fundamentals of the SP to engage group. So there's some room for playing around with the model there. So now I'm going to start concluding. I didn't really give you a complete picture of gut physics. I didn't tell you how the gut group was broken. I didn't tell you how doublet triplet splitting occurred. I didn't do a full analysis of proton decay. So there's a lot more that can be done there to come up with a coherent picture of what the high scale physics looks like. I think a very intriguing idea an observation is that most of these flavor sectors contain composite operators in the adjoint representation of SU5. If you were clever enough, maybe you could use this one of these composite operators to break the gut group and combine a flavor sector with a gut breaking sector, and that would. As it stands, it's playing one role only. That's right. So, coming up with some, combination of flavor and gut breaking, I think, would be a nice idea. And of course, you can think about other gut groups, like SO10. There's a very interesting story with Suzy breaking operators. That I didn't have time to go into, we gave the matter fields in anomalous dimensions under some CFT, but this means that if I also have Planck suppressed soft mass operators lying around, something like x dagger x t dagger t, where these have generation indices, then these operators will also flow to zero due to the conformal dynamics at a rate which depends on the anomalous dimensions of T dagger T. Okay, so this is something that is difficult to calculate, but you might hope that these operators flow to zero and can help solve, Planck suppressed, so maybe they can help solve the Suzy flavor problem and make gravity mediation viable. So that's a very interesting idea, which was explored a little bit back around the time that Nelson and Strassler wrote this paper, but I think there's probably more that can be done to see if it works. Finally, there are a couple classes of models that we didn't really explore. We didn't look very carefully at chiral models, and we didn't look very carefully at non-gut models. So maybe this exploring these kinds of models is an avenue for future study. Another thing to mention is that, at least morally speaking, large N flavor CFTs have a dual ADS picture involving T1 and T2 in the bulk, localized towards the IR brain, and everything else on the UV brain is corresponding to elementary fields. And the main difference between the models that we wrote down and typical warped flavor models is that in typical warped flavor models, the bulk masses for fields are inputs into the theory. They're free parameters, whereas in the models we wrote down, they are effectively outputs. The model determined them. Another point to make is that
if you didn't have a holographic theory, it wouldn't change. Any particular one would determine those things, right?
If you did, yeah, exactly. From the point of view of model builders who write down 5D effective field theories, this is a difference in model building. But I agree completely with what your point.
But in the world, isn't the interaction superpositions like some kind of input that you're assuming some discrete symmetries that control that superposition or something like that?
I'm not assuming any discrete symmetries.
Well, I mean, you said I can put the A4, A to the 4th, or AQ.
Yeah, oh, sorry. So those are some discrete choices that you can make. Whereas in a 5D effective field theory in ADS, the bulk masses corresponding to the dimensions of the operators are continuous free parameters.
So in these cases where you have these discrete choices, you can make sure that you can make these discrete choices such that you also allow, I don't know, the A squared term or things like that at the end of the day. Is there some symmetry that you can choose that constrains the superpotential to be that thing that you wrote down?
Is there some... Well, let me put the superpotential back up here. Sorry. Okay, so you're talking about this superpotential. And so at this stage, in addition to this, we have A squared and Q bar Q. So I think we're writing down all of the operators compatible with the symmetries up to higher dimensional.
A squared is more relevant. Why don't you use it to determine the other charges?
Well, A squared is what's causing the CFT regime to exit, right? So if an A squared term became marginal, then you would end up just leaving the CFT regime. So that doesn't give you... That wouldn't lead to a CFT that you could use.
So the same with the sales flow of a CFT, how clear is that? You can do a bunch of checks.
You can do checks, right. So one thing you can check is to look at the theory without these interactions, see whether these operators are relevant or irrelevant. Okay, so if they're irrelevant, then if you add the operator with a small coefficient, it'll just flow back to zero, and you probably don't have a CFT with this operator around. If they're relevant, you know, the coefficient's going to grow and grow, and you'll get to some, you know, either you'll get to some new fixed point, or you'll leave the conformal regime. Okay, those are the two options. You can also, you know, right. You can also make sure that nothing inconsistent is happening. So if you make the assumption that these interactions are marginal and you end up with, you know, violations of unitarity in the R charges, then maybe your assumption that this is a fixed point is wrong. In addition, I mean, it could be that your assumption, it could be that you're missing some accidental symmetries. It could also be that your assumption that there's a fixed point is wrong. Okay. Yeah.
So how can you have the A cubed being marginal and the A squared being not being relevant?
A squared is relevant.
Yes. So you should then study the fixed point after.
So the assumption is that throughout the conformal window, these are close to their fixed point values, and the A squared operator is relevant, has a small coefficient, isn't affecting the dynamics much, and then at some scale, it starts becoming an important operator, and then causes the CFT regime to exit. Okay, any other questions? Let's see, the other thing I wanted to just mention about this ADS picture is that you might expect this kind of picture to only work at large N, and large N is really where we found this Landau pole constraint being strongest. So this consideration might make you think that you should be focusing on small n theories where this picture isn't valid.
Do you see that in the small n description?
Yeah, you can. You know, you can parametrically look at the n scalings of the, you know, the bulk contribution to the evolution of the gauge couplings, and it scales like n. So you can do that kind of analysis. Okay, so let me just summarize the main points. The basic point is that the flavor hierarchies can be generated dynamically due to conformal dynamics, and supersymmetric models of this type are now almost all calculable due to A maximization. On the other hand, most such models run into Landau pole problems for the visible gauge couplings, and at least if you focus on vector-like simple group gut theories, the class that I described, this almost uniquely picks out a model or small class of models. Ultimately, we still need a more complete picture of how this fits in with gut physics, Suzy breaking, etc. But the hope is that perhaps thinking about the flavor hierarchies can guide us in the right direction. So I will stop there. Yeah.
Can you ever pass through a Landau pole and go into a Seiberg dual theory? I mean, this sort of happens in cascading theories.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, can that happen in a model like this?
You could certainly imagine that SU5 is the magnetic gauge group of some electric theory. But I think coming up with concrete models where that actually works is a hard thing to do. But in principle, yeah, you could imagine that happens. On the other hand, when you get into a regime where the SU5 gauge coupling is fairly strongly coupled, then you might worry that you're not in a CFT anymore, and you couldn't, right? And you can't use these techniques of A maximization and other things to calculate the dimensions.
So it sounds like you probably